7-inch. Is that the right?
Sorry, the first thing I just, when I just hit record, the first thing that was said was 7-inch, is that right? Crikey.
Talking about tablets, Tim.
Ah.
Honest.
How sneaky.
Right, let's let Jacques Berger get us started.
Hi, I'm Jacques Berger, and when I'm stalking Springbok in the Namibian wilderness, all I take with me is a knife and the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. It's all a real man needs.
Thank you, Jacques Berger, and thank you for downloading and listening to the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast, a podcast where we don't take ourselves or the game too seriously. We just love it. And I am Tim, that is JB.
Good day, Tim.
And he is Phil.
Hi, Tim.
Actually, I said I don't take the game, or we don't take the game too seriously, but actually, do you know what? I only wish that was true, because there's something very serious that we have to discuss before we do anything else, gents.
Ooh,
for a long time, in fact, ever since the podcast started, we have tried to lead a crusade, tried to be the saviour and the voice of the people and change a heinous, unforgivable scourge on our game, the wearing of trainers instead of boots in promotional pictures. Now, we've tried to make sure that when you see captains gathered with a trophy before the start of a competition, you never have to see them wearing a pair of scuffed up Nikes or New Balance or whatever. And we thought we'd got somewhere. BT Sport and the Aviva Premiership, they seem to have got their house in order at the start of the 2014-15 season and had all their players in boots. And then in World Cup year, ahead of one of the most hotly anticipated Six Nations tournaments in living memory, we've had to see some great men, some great leaders, O'Connell, Dussatoir, Warburton, Robshaw, Parise, Laidlaw, all in their training shoes. So we tried, everybody. We tried and we failed.
Excuse the pun, but it's a retrograde step. This upset me a lot. It upset me a lot because they even changed it for the European Champions Cup. They had the boots on walking through Paris. But, sad days. Real sad days.
Yeah, it is sad times.
It does make me want to institute my new rule, though.
What's that?
That if you wear trainers for the photo shoot, you have to wear trainers through the entire tournament. Fair's fair.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, you've got to declare your footwear early.
Now, they had the most annoying part of this is the IRB Six Nations were tweeting a load of pictures on the day that they launched it at some country manor somewhere.
Some of the worst pictures I've ever seen, by the way.
Yeah, well, we'll get onto that in a second. But they were tweeting pictures from behind the scenes going, oh, only an hour till we launched the competition, only half an hour. And there were some pictures of the players arriving, and there was O'Connell and Dussatoir sat next to each other talking, and they were both holding a pair of boots. So they had boots. They had the boots, but they just didn't wear them.
And do you know what's happened? They probably hired some photographer from somewhere who's never done this before and has nothing to do with rugby. And the lads are there like, look, we need to wear the boots because, you know, obviously the podcast is all over us. And the photographer's like, no, trust me, I'm a pro. And then they end up in trainers.
Yeah, they were more concerned with doing what JB sort of pointed out were rubbish pictures than,
they were really
than putting
rubbish.
Their boots on. They were really bad.
Some of these guys, I think Robshaw and Warburton are fairly conservative characters, aren't they? They're straight away like, you know, gregarious, outgoing types. And when some fashion photographers like, okay, work it, grab the trophy.
Yeah, lean in, all of you lean in and grab the trophy. It was like, I can only imagine the photographer there was like doing it for a local newspaper. Because you know how like in local newspapers.
I bet he wasn't. I bet they've got like the headman from Vogue or something with the budgets they have.
It reminded me of local newspapers. You know, there'd be like a kid who sort of, I don't know, like a seagull's nicked his fish and chips. And they'll go, rub your tummy like you're really hungry and look sad. It was like that. It was like, look, like you really want the trophy and you're leaning in to grab it.
Local news stories are terrible. There was one in where I work up in Oldham. Local obelisk gets wind erosion or something awful.
It's a big problem, that, Jay.
Oh, yeah, huge.
Well, anyway, we're going to try and put that to one side if we can, because it's here, boys. The Six Nations in World Cup year is almost here.
Indeed it is.
Oh, it's exciting.
I've gone from being really, really down about Wales' chances to really, really confident now.
Yeah, because they start against England, who've got no players left.
England have got plenty of players left.
They've got a few.
They've got loads of players. Look, you've got like 65 million people to choose from. You've got plenty of players left, believe me.
A few things ahead of the game. It looks we'll find out this week what the decision is, but it looks like the roof is going to be off unless there's some horrific weather conditions. It's down to England, and Tom Youngs had said it in a previous interview talking about that 33 defeat in 2013. That horrible night. Brilliant night for JB.
It's all right.
Tom Youngs, speaking about that afterwards, said it was so noisy they couldn't even hear line-out calls.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's been in the papers this week that England have been training with speakers on full blast.
Is that really?
Yeah. At Pennyhill Park to try and replicate
Which,
the
by
atmosphere.
The way, could be like a Bond body layer.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool,
really cool place to go.
Oh, have you got a picture up of the Six Nations ladies captains?
I certainly have. I'm flicking through the promotional shots.
That one there is Rachel Taylor, who is Welsh captain and also a good North Walian.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, she's from Colwyn Bay Rugby Club, which is where I'm from.
A bit off topic, Jay.
Look, you're the one looking at pictures of the ladies' captains.
I am, flicking through all of the promotional shots.
We will talk at length about the Six Nations Championship. We will talk at shorth. I don't know what the opposite of at length is.
At shorth. Old English.
We will talk about the LV Cup at shorth. Because I didn't see any of it. Anyone see any of the LV
Cup? Yeah, I did, actually.
Go on.
I
can't believe what's happened here. JB, one of the biggest critics of the LV Cup, is our official LV Cup correspondent.
It's quite good, actually. I watched the last 15 minutes of Bath versus Harlequins at the Stoop, and it was really exciting. They played Banahan at 12, and they span it wide, and Banahan found himself on the wing.
Banners!
he went inside, came outside, burned the guy round the outside.
He's playing well.
Yeah, really well. Looked to find, I think it was Ollie Woodburn, on his inside shoulder. Dead simple pass, threw it in front of him, went to ground. I know. His running looked really, really good. I don't think he's a 12.
Banahan is confounding all the critics.
Well, confounding me, at least.
JB. And he's, JB, the critic. And, he's making JB actually get excited and shout, "Banners!" And we've already also had people getting in touch
Benders!
Saying that whenever they see Nick Abendanen playing, they shout "Benders," and that's something that JB's done for years. "Benders!"
When we watch Sale versus Clermont, every 2 minutes, me and Jay were shouting "Sippers, Benders!"
Love it. There's actually one thing I meant to play on going back to the boots for a second. There is one U2 song that seemed appropriate. I just thought I'd play a little clip. Rugby players, if you're listening, no one listens to U2 anymore after they tried to flog their music on you without you even having a choice.
Is this
however,
some sort of
beat? No, just listen for a second. Captains. There you go. Get on your boots. Well done, Bono.
So I missed that story about U2 and download what?
They had all...
Is this a DJ thing?
It was big news everywhere, I thought. They had it so that every single iTunes account got a copy of their new album, whether you wanted it or not.
Can we
really?
Do that?
Yeah. Did you not know about that?
I did not know about that.
Can we do that with a podcast?
That's a great idea.
Have we got the resources that you two have available?
No, you two got paid for that to happen. They got paid.
Oh, well, can we do that?
Why is no one paying us to so force our podcast on everyone?
Well, is it Tim Johns, the head of Apple or whatever now? Or whatever his name is?
Tim Cook.
Yeah, Tim Cook. We will happily have you pay us money to put us on every iTunes account in the world.
I think Tim Cook is he from Lancaster or somewhere?
No idea.
I'll go with it.
Fact.
I don't know.
Questionable fact there.
Who's the British guy?
Apple.
For Apple. Grew up in Lancaster, a huge...
Don't know.
I've got this wrong, but I think he's a rugby fan.
Tim Cook was born in Alabama. I can tell you that the former president, I think he's a former president now, of Sony, was a Welshman. So I'm guessing he was a rugby fan.
Fact.
No. Just facts dropping everywhere.
It was a
tonight.
Guy who was in charge of USA Rugby. Port New Zealander, Port British.
Oh, God, to USA Rugby now.
Fact.
I love it.
He probably spotted RGC as well.
Speculation about CEOs of the world.
Right, I'll find that out.
You are listening to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, by the way. And let's talk about the Saxons game against the Irish Wolfhounds. And, everyone was talking about Sam Burgess. So should we
Did
just
he play?
Apparently he was involved. There was a bit.
Really?
There was a bit of media coverage about it beforehand.
Oh, I've completely missed that.
I think he's been dealt with a little bit harshly by virtue of the fact that he probably, on merit, he doesn't deserve to be in the side.
Not even close.
And as a result, he's being judged as if he is in the side and pushing for international honours, and he's just
almost,
not currently.
Almost exactly what I've said for the last few weeks, isn't it, really?
But he's only 4 months into rugby union.
I know, it's ridiculous.
He's clearly an amazing talent, and I think it's right of the England setup to get him involved and play him in Saxon's games.
Why?
But
why
I suppose it's the responsibility of the media to sort of temper
why
the
is
expectation.
Why is it right that they did it for, doing it for him, but not, say, Carl Price when he came over?
Because, well, Sam Burgess is an exceptional physical talent.
Sam Burgess is like Sonny Bill Williams kind of specimen.
I don't know. Well, OK. Let's just park that to one side. I just feel that their time would be better spent developing someone who's closer to the international squad than Sam Burgess at this
time.
Yeah,
someone like Sam Hill.
You know, when you've got Banahan playing at 12...
Oh, you're not giving a call for Banners.
No, I'm not.
To be in the Saxons.
I'm just saying, why aren't they resting Banahan and letting Sam Burgess play at 12 in that kind
in
of
the
game.
LV Cup.
You know, surely that's a lot better for him then.
But he will benefit from being around the Saxons and the England squad because he's joined up with them for a couple of days.
There's something about this Burgess palaver which caught my eye and it is endemic of why England aren't the team that they could be. And it's this. It's because I think it was John Clark. Was it John Clark who's in charge of the... John Callard, sorry. Said... he was worth having around for his off-field stuff, for his off-field leadership. And there's so much of this management nonsense talk in the England squad about off-field this and culture that, and just get down to picking your best players and playing rugby. And I really don't like selecting Sam Burgess just for his off-the-field leadership. If that was the
that
case,
wasn't why they're doing it. They were picking him for his potential on-field impact that he could have on the international game,
but,
be it in 6 months' time or in 2 years' time,
when
whatever.
When he was found short, they're like, oh, well, you know, off-the-field, he's great. If off-the-field is great, well, just why don't you select Richard Branson? You know, someone really inspirational. So it's just a
Branners!
it is interesting that he didn't play particularly well. I don't know if we'll see him at 12 much in future, and certainly not for England, but he has joined up with the full England squad for at least a couple of days over the weekend and will be returning to Bath midweek next week. I think I understand the logic behind this.
Yeah.
Because England are obviously short of numbers and they're not short of numbers.
No, they need bodies out there in training.
They need bodies, for training. And he is the closest thing at 12 to Jamie Roberts, so I think they'll be using him in defensive drills.
That's a great shout, Phil.
That isn't a bad shout, actually, Phil. I'll give you that.
So I think that makes sense, and he will learn from it. England will learn from it because he'll be doing that direct running thing, so that's quite a good all-round, and then he joins back up with Bath on Wednesday.
Definitely found short in the Wolfhounds. You make a really good point that if you can model his game on Jamie Roberts, I mean, he's at least as talented naturally as Jamie Roberts, right?
Yes, certainly.
And if he's to move out one, I tell you what, a world-class centre who I think he could replicate might be someone like Yannick Jojon, who just used to plant his legs in the ground and offload.
Yeah.
From 13.
We've had a tweet from Fatty Matty this week. Thank you very much for getting in touch with us on Twitter and interacting and whatnot. We're on Facebook. We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Fatty Matty says, apparently there's a rumour that Sky and BT Sport are in a bidding war for a Sam Burgess channel.
Yeah.
Derry Gasman on Twitter has got in touch and said, boys, Sean O'Brien is back. Surely it's time to go out, take your tent up a mountain. Go pitch your tent with Sean O'Brien.
Do you know what? You never get this music, do you? Because you control the buttons.
He's a ridiculous specimen. No, I'm
this
saying...
This is for Tim.
This is for all of us. Oh, man, Sean O'Brien is the kind of guy I can imagine fly fishing with up a mountain, cooking over an open fire...
Cooking Sean O'Brien over an open fire.
I tell you what, you'd get... It'd be very lean meat. Yep. That'd keep you going, that.
Yeah, keep you going for quite a while, that.
Dan Shears says, on the subject of Sam Burgess, that he would have preferred Sam Hill to have got a chance, kind of echoing what you said.
Sounds like a wise man.
And JB on Twitter, and I am going to be having words with JB after this podcast about his Twitter etiquette. He was having a rant at a referee, shock horror.
I normally back the refs to the hill.
Stable referee.
I normally back the refs to the hill. This guy was.
Where did they get? He came wearing gym kit for a start.
Yeah,
he did. He was a bit whistle happy for my liking.
Yeah, he did ruin the flow of the game a bit.
Yeah,
but Duncan Muir said, "Go on then. If you're going to criticise referees, go on a refereeing course. Then you can legitimately criticise. Would you consider doing that? I think that would be brilliant. I'd love to see JB on
a couple of games actually.
I've reffed a couple as well, but I've not trained. I'm not a qualified ref, but I'd do it if you did, would Jay? Because you're already one, Tim, aren't you?
I've got my coaching qualifications booked. Shock horror!
Oh, really?
So I'm going to be going through my coaching qualifications. But,
would you want to be coached by JB Phil?
Hey, I'm the next. Who am I going to be next? I'm the next Dean Ryan.
Who's an egomaniac coach? Richard Cockerell.
Yeah, that'll do.
Wow, steam coming out of his ears, and we're doing it this way, whatever
yeah,
you say.
I could do a refereeing.
Your skin would be thick enough to take all the flack, I'm sure, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also, JB, or who was it who did the, who mentioned that Nick Auterac looked like? Yeah. Was that you, Phil?
That was me, yes.
Yeah, so Phil made a brilliant observation about Nick Auterac, the bath prop, and that he looked a bit like a Highland cow. And also looked a bit like, what character was it?
It's Goku from Dragon Ball Z, if anyone knows it.
Henry Thomas favourited that tweet. Nope. Nick Auterac himself retweeted that,
did he?
That tweet. Yeah. And Sam Knott, a Bath fan, got in touch and said, our nickname for Nick Auterac is Hench Harry Styles.
Yep,
I like that. Yeah, that's good.
It's a good nickname. Right then. Oh, before we go on and talk about the Six Nations, which we will at length, do you remember last week we were talking about the fact we had a Egg Chasers fantasy rugby private league on the ESPN rugby site? Mm-hmm. So they're running a fantasy league and they've got their own prizes and whatnot for the overall prize. But we want to have our own private league. We've got some, like, what, 150-ish people?
Yeah, 136 was the last count.
We've got 136 people playing our league.
That's now, when it's not even...
Four weeks ago.
We're not even got a whole week. So plenty of time for you to get involved as well. Come and join us. Canterbury have said they're going to provide a prize.
We do love Canterbury.
An excellent prize, no doubt.
It'll be some...
An excellent, high-quality, well-made prize.
Yeah. Absolutely. And they've... Wonderful. When they've said they're going to come up and help us out with a prize, they have given some awesome stuff. We've had massive boxes arrive before for stuff to give away. So
I've got a box arriving at my work very, very soon.
Yeah, I saw you were negotiating that on your own.
Ambassador, I'll have you know.
So, yes, if you want to win some prizes and win the pride of winning the Egg Chasers Fantasy Private League, then the private league code, and we will tweet this out and Facebook this out, so go find it. But the league code, Phil?
Is 81262.
And we made the comment last time that it sounds like...
Come on, Carl!
This
chat
advert.
Back! 50-50-50.
I've got a bit of a treat for you,
lads. Oh, yes!
No. You said, I'd love to hear our code.
Yeah, definitely.
That style. And basically what I thought was, the style is like 90s rave music. And yeah, here we go. So if you're not sure what the league code is for our private league, then here it comes. Come and challenge like-minded rugby fans and join the Egg Chasers Private Fantasy Rugby League for the Six Nations Championship. You could even win some prizes. It's the ESPN Fantasy Rugby League. We've got a private code. Come and join our league. Just type in 81262. That private league code is
81262.
81262. One more time.
Terminal 81262.
Hit me now. 81262.
Oh my god, very good, Tim.
That's brilliant.
Very good.
So come join us.
What's that?
Take us on.
81262. Even I know it. I've not even got a team yet.
So
wow.
We're all picking our own teams. Mine is Tim and JB's is JB and Phil is Phil. But we're collectively doing a team as well. And we're so confident that by uniting the power of our separate minds and putting them together in one team, we can even tell you what our team is going to be and we'll still come out on top.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that's guaranteed.
So, Phil, go on then, just rattle through our 15 that we've picked for our fantasy league team.
Well, we picked this earlier. If I run through the backs and Jay can run through the forwards.
Yeah.
From 15, we've got Halfpenny, who is also our kicker.
Yeah, that then, was pretty... No debate, was there, with that one?
Yeah, definitely Halfpenny kicking, with Sexton out for the first game at least. Then Tommy Bow and Teddy Thomas, whose attacking potential certainly outweighs his defensive weaknesses. Then Fofana and Robbie Henshaw in the centres.
Some people might say it's quite a bold call, Henshaw.
I wanted Darren Cave.
I think Henshaw is the most likely to start in the centres for Ireland. There's a question mark whether Cave or Jared Payne will start alongside him. Mm. So we could change that later in the week, but that's where we are at the moment. George Ford and Reece Webb as our halfbacks.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay, another pack.
Again, that was aided by Owen Farrell being out injured. There's no debate who England's number one is now.
Yeah, and Sexton missing the first game as well.
Yes.
It's, yeah, so, easy.
Our pack in the back row, we've got Armitage, Haskell and Ewers. I'm not allowed to pick this. Now I've got to read. Okay. But Vinipola, Parise, Heaslip.
As three number eights.
Yeah. And now JB didn't really want Sergio.
I didn't know. What's the point? You know,
just because he looks incredible.
He does
look
great.
As anything.
Yeah. And if Italy do anything at all, he will be involved right in the centre of it.
Whether they do anything at all or not. Well,
that's still up in the air.
Yeah, they've gone backwards a bit. Anyway, so, yeah, him. Alan Wynne-Jones and Paul O'Connell, man of the match, magnets.
Captains.
Both captains will both play 80 minutes.
Men.
Yeah.
And we've cheated by going for three hookers. Benjamin Kayser, Richard Hibbard and Ross Ford. So I think...
Token Scott.
Yeah.
In breaking it down by nationalities, we've got one Englishman, one Scotsman.
Two English, one Italy, one Scot. Three French. Four Ireland, four Wales.
I've got a feeling, you know, that the French team are going to have an absolute stinker of a tournament.
It could just go either way, couldn't it? They start at home to Scotland, so you've got to imagine they're going to get off on a good foot.
Winning that. Scotland are on a real crest of a wave. And...
Yeah, and Vern Cotter's doing his thing. Now, Warren Gatland has said many times before that starting well in the Six Nations is really, really important. So that was our team, by the way. So pick yours. Add it to our private league. And Warren Gatland kind of knows a thing or two. And, I mean, that is just a mouthwatering game. There's no better way to say this tournament has started than bang, Friday night. Well, we don't know if the roof on will be on or not, but this was... No, I'm an Englishman, and this is as good as it gets in terms of a pre-game curtain raiser, with the exception of the Harker.
What?! That's not even the same league.
No. I'd say the Haka in the Millennium Stadium.
Haka's rubbish. I mean, Haka in the Millennium Stadium had to be done in the change rooms. It was so
rubbish. The Haka in the Millennium Stadium, you will not get a better curtain raiser to a game. Yeah. So I cannot wait.
Maybe people like the Haka are people that don't really watch rugby and they're discussing it in the public.
That's everyone.
Thing? Oh, it's good, isn't it? No, it's rubbish.
No, when we watched the Haka live in America and the crowd were chanting USA, USA, and then the fireworks went off. It was incredible. Okay. Incredible.
I'm on record saying this. The Haka is rubbish because you're not allowed to do anything with it.
The Haka is not rubbish. The lack of what the oppositions can do.
Enforced by New Zealand. Otherwise, they'll do it in the change room. So I say now, just do it in the change room. Take your ball and go home.
Let the boys dance.
You can't come with the 20 odds of it, you can't disrespect it, you can't respond to it.
This man, as a Welshman, I'm so jealous of...
Of us winning Grand Slams?
No, of people being Welsh and having that.
Honestly, if you go to South Wales, you won't be that jealous.
But no, you mentioned, like, jealous of Wales winning Grand Slams and tournaments. Yes, England have had one since 2003. I'm looking to Phil, because he's the stat man, is that right?
Have they not won it since?
Since the year they won it in the World Cup year 2003, I think they've only had one.
We've won it once. England have won it once since 2003. Yeah,
fact.
In 2011.
Yeah, I thought they'd won
that for the size of England's union and for the resources they've got and the players they've got. That is a woeful effort.
So the problem is Stuart Lancaster. I've come to this conclusion.
Whoa.
The problem is Stuart Lancaster, and this is how I finally got to this conclusion. If you look at Gatland, then you look at Lancaster. Lancaster has been in the job now since the last World Cup, and he's still no closer to having his final team. If I asked five people and said, guys, pick me your best England team, they'd probably all pick five different England teams. If I asked the same people, pick me your best Welsh teams, they'd all probably pick the same team. Because the problem with Lancaster is he has his system, and he tries to get people to fill his system, which is why people say, Robshaw's a great flanker, best one for our system. But actually, it should be, who is the best flanker? Gatland picks the best 15 players. There are no better 15 than in Wales than the 15 that Gatland puts out.
I would disagree with that slightly.
Yeah, I think I would as well, actually, Jay.
Gatland changes his systems.
The floor is yours, Phil.
Well, I do think there's been a lot made of Gatland ball and picking the biggest backs available.
And best backs?
The biggest backs available is what a lot of people would say that Gatland ball is. And you'd argue that Liam Williams is a better all-round rugby player than Alex Cuthbert.
Yep.
Alex Cuthbert is bigger, stronger, and
better
a good finisher, but he's not a better all-round
rugby
player.
We've yet to see what the team will be, but my guess is Liam Williams, in form, looking electric, I think he'll be on the bench and it will start with Cuthbert.
Well, because that fits his system.
I think you're barking up the wrong tree, boys. I think if Liam Williams starts, he'll be ahead of George North, which sounds ludicrous to anyone that watches the Premiership. But those in the know around Wales don't think Gatland's very happy with North.
No. Well, Gatland is playing mind games there.
I suspect he is, but...
There's no way that George North is not starting that test match. No way on earth.
Here's what I'm going to pick up, Jay, you on that point about, you know, Lancaster picks the system and Gatland picks the players on merit. I think back to his Wasps days, and what everyone at Wasps says is that his whole philosophy, everything, was about physical conditioning, about weights, about fitness, and he has a game plan which is really, really simple. So simple, the most basic of any international team's game, but they do it at such a pace and they require such fitness that it is a system that they then fit players to. That's why Adam Jones isn't involved in a squad. He would have been in the England squad, probably on the bench. He would have been in Scotland, France, Ireland.
But he has been in the squad for a long, long time.
Yeah, I know, but he's not involved because he's not fit enough. He can't play the pace of game that Wales plays. So I think the complete opposite. I think that what he did at Wasps was physical conditioning, and what he's doing at Wales. Have you heard about what they're doing in terms of their training?
Yeah, they're going to Colorado.
They're not focused on doing loads of rugby sessions to tinker and make sure the game plan's right. They're doing full on mental fitness now, even in the build up to the Six Nations.
Don't get me wrong; he definitely has his preferences, and no one doesn't have a preference. But if you look at his team selections in the past for Wales, he has gone from. By the way, nobody loves Gavin Henson more than Gatland. Gavin Henson hasn't played for God knows how long, and they still wanted him in the probable squad. And prior to that, they put him on a poster for the kit. I mean, he's retired for 18 months. So he's gone from Gavin Henson, who at the time was a marvellous distributor of rugby ball, swapped him with Roberts because Roberts was the best player available, and they've just changed the system completely. They've gone from Dwayne Peel to Mike Phillips, and now they've got this halfway house in Reece Webb. So he does pick the best players rather than the best system, and then he plugs them in. It just so happens he's lucky with all these big guys to play what is now called Gatland ball.
They're massive. They're absolutely massive.
England could pick a massive pack. A massive back line. They just choose not to.
So if Gatland was in charge of England, his back line would what be?
Banners.
Yeah, exactly.
Banahan and Vandel on the wings.
Yeah. Well, why not Banners at 12?
So if Gatland was picking the England squad, I reckon that the England team, the back line, I reckon there'd be no debate. It'd be Owen Farrell would be his number one fly half.
Really?
And he'd have Ford on the bench. Yeah, definitely. Because that's Gatland's style.
And look at James Hook. Exactly, yeah. So he could just...
Yeah, James Hook got dropped. He played Stephen Jones, who was solid in defence.
Dan Bigger, Stephen Jones.
And by the way, he has played James Hook at 12. It depends on who's...
And he'd have Tuilagi and Burrell. We wouldn't be having this conversation about should Jonathan Joseph play in the centre, Kyle Eastman. It would be like, no, neither of them play. It's Burrell and Tuilagi, and that's
really
it.
Weird about Tuilagi is he's probably England's only player who has outstanding natural talent who you go, he's definitely in. Everyone else is kind of, well, they're okay.
Yeah, but
maybe,
I think this is where I actually disagree with you most on the whole system thing. I think Stuart Lancaster doesn't totally know his system, and that's why it's so hard for him to pick players. Because Gatland just, you would go, you play. He's playing this Gatland ball, he'd go, this week, I think for Friday, if Gatland was picking the England team for Friday, he'd be going, I know he's not playing very well, but we're going to go 12 Trees and Burrell, because they're big, solid, robust, and there we go.
I think Lancaster does know probably 13 or 14 out of his starting lineup. But the only reason he doesn't know, I think he probably doesn't know his best nine, because he's changed them up. A lot of people would say it's care, but he's changed it up, and he doesn't know his best 12, and that's only because of injuries and form. Mm-hmm. If had 12 Trees been playing well since his good Six Nations last year for Gloucester, then he would be the starting 12, but he hasn't. He's been poor all through, so he's had to change up and try other people, try Eastman, try Barrett.
Classic example of where Lancaster's got it wrong is the back row. He sticks with Rob Shaw through thick and thin, and everyone goes, oh, well, he's the best for that role within that team and that system.
I don't agree with that. I think he's the best seven in England.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, there's...
Armitage is arguably better, but he's not playing in England, so he's not available to him.
I mean, Haskell.
No,
Haskell is the
best
seven.
He's not a seven.
Yes, he is. He's 100% a seven.
I think Haskell, if Tom Wood's not fit, could play six for England this coming week. And would be superb because he tackles so hard, he works so hard at the breakdown, he's so strong.
I don't think he's an international seven.
No, I agree. His distribution.
I don't think Robshaw is, though. I think Robshaw is an international six. I think he's a great seven.
Now, I saw some statistics from the Autumn Internationals that compared.
Oh, I'm getting my fact button ready here.
Compared Sam Warburton to Chris Robshaw, and Chris Robshaw on turnovers, tackles, meters made, and offloads was better in every single measure than Sam Warburton.
Was this the same?
Tackles, meters made, turnovers, and I think it was offloads.
And Robshaw was above Warburton
in the Ultimate Internationals on every count.
Fact. Well, okay, so that is nice.
It's an indication that Robshaw is a proper seven.
Well,
yeah, because he's doing some of those. He's doing lots of the things that sevens should be doing. He's no Hoops or McCaw, by the way. Obviously,
no. Good player. He's an international player, but he's not the best seven. He's not the best option right now because I honestly think Haskell's. If you look at the Harlequins versus Wasps game, I know you can't say it is a fair match saying it's Robshaw versus Haskell, but Haskell outplayed him.
Right. Let's quickly, if we can do this quickly, let's pick 15 out of the 2 15s that we predict might be on the park between England and Wales really quickly. So, fullback, would you go Brown or Halfpenny?
Halfpenny.
I'd go Brown.
I go Brown.
How? How?
Right. Because Halfpenny is a very good kicker of the ball.
Very good kicker.
And he's very good defensively.
And he's a Lions fullback. They could have had Brown, but they didn't.
I think if you're picking the Lions now, it would be different. In the last Six Nations, he was the top try scorer, most metres made, most men beaten. He was like top of all the attacking stats in the last Six Nations.
It's got to be Halfpenny. Has to be Halfpenny.
Right, so my back line combined would be on form, Webb, Ford, Roberts, Davies, North, possibly Williams or Cuthbert.
Sorry, Ford. Ford.
And, and then Brown. So it would be 10 and 15 England and the rest Wales.
Yeah, but hang on. How is Ford, maybe as a natural talent, might be better than Bigger. But Bigger's a quality international fly half who's proven it has to be Bigger. It has to be Webb. It has to be Bigger. It has to be Halfpenny.
So it has to be the whole Wales back line. Well, all right, fine. In the forwards, I'd go Hartley at hooker. I would go. In fact, I might even pick England's whole front row.
Samson Lee, I think, would get
ahead of Wilson, the head of the cornerstone of your favourite Bath pack.
Yeah, I think so. Actually,
really,
I think so.
Samson Lee's a good player, but I think I would have Wilson ahead of him. I'd probably have Hibbard ahead of Hartley just because of his Hartley's disciplinary record.
Yeah. I actually quite like Hartley. I think he's the best all-round player there.
Atwood and Wynne Jones in the engine room.
100%.
And then back row. Do you know what? It probably highlights this. I was just looking at it and thinking Warburton, Robshaw, and then I don't know between Vunipola and Faletau.
Well, Vunipola every time.
Let's just say the seventh berth is Warburton.
Warburton's, yeah. Six Robshaw.
Is he a better six than all the other options?
I think so.
And by the way, I'm not talking about Welsh options. I'm talking about the English options. Wood. I think Wood plays him off the park at six.
And I think Haskell would be a better six. I think Robshaw's a better seven than Haskell. I think Haskell's a better six than
This is exactly what happened to Gatland and the Lions when he left him at home.
And Vunipola or Faletau?
Vunipola, every time.
I think so as well. In Gatland's system, he'd definitely be.
I could flip a coin on those two. They're cousins anyway.
All right. Okay, well, that gives you an indication. I think if that's any sort of indication, it's basically England need to play tight front five rugby. Wales need to get the ball out.
England need to play tight front five rugby if Davy Wilson is fit, because if he's missing, then we've got a real problem.
Listen, one quick thing. Thank you very much for everyone getting in touch on Twitter over the last week. One little thing we lobbed out there as a bit of a kind of Friday waste a bit of time was come up with some alternative rugby team names. This is after Max Lahief was announced as moving back from the Melbourne Rebels to Bath. He played in the LV Cup at the weekend, I believe, or he will be this.
He did, yes.
Yeah, he did. Massive pair of guns on him, that lad.
Yeah.
But another guy who's come out of the London Irish Academy, and whether directly or indirectly, always they end up at Bath. It's happening with Tom Homer as well. It's happened with Max Lahief. So basically that brought up the nickname again, that Bath, their actual name should be London Irish West. And seriously, as was pointed out by, where have I got it here? Chris Bailey, sorry, must be the easiest job in rugby being a Bath talent spotter, because you just hang outside Hazelwood and chat to the young London Irish guys.
Hazelwood, is that what the
a new training ground, yeah, at London.
Tell
Irish.
You what, rugby have really got their act together with like nice sounding training
grounds. Yeah, it does sound good, doesn't it?
Pennyhill Park, Hazelwood,
yeah.
Farley House.
So here's some alternative rugby team names. Oval Digest on Twitter said Munster should be called Leinster Academy Graduates. And on a similar one, Jamie Fenton said that Leicester Tigers should just be called Newcastle Falcons Academy Graduates.
Yeah.
And also said that Bristol should be Welsh Internationals of the early 90s, 15. Atticus Beaterbeard, long-time follower, said Exeter should be the King Midas Invitational 15.
Yep.
Rich Church Keane says London Welsh should just be called London Welsh Lose. It would save a lot of time. Which is a good one. Also said that Wasps should be the Coventry Cuckoos, taking over a nest and forcing the inhabitants out.
I like that.
Quinns apparently should be the Downton Abbey House 15 or the Battenberg 15.
Nice, yeah. I like that.
And the one that came up a lot is one that JB's used a lot for Saracens, Globo Gym.
Oh, Hive Mind, or even better, the Borg.
The Surrey Cyborg.
Yeah.
The Borg. So,
Borgs.
At Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Should we talk about something? Well, how do you see the game going in Cardiff?
I was going to say, quiz, if we do the wrap-up at the end.
Yeah, go on.
We've got a quiz.
Ooh, a quiz.
Oh, we've got a quiz.
How novel.
Yes,
my Phil's quiz master today, so...
Now my back.
Eyes down, brain in gear. JB's got a bad back. Ugh. How's your brain, though?
Functioning. Barely.
What's the bad back from? Is that from playing?
Yeah, just wear and tear.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Go on, Phil.
Okay. So, we know there's a lot of controversy at the moment about players born in different countries or living in different countries playing for their national teams.
Mm.
Now, in the Six Nations squads that were announced last week, Scotland led the way with players not born in Scotland.
Oh, nailed it. Oh, not born in Scotland?
Not born in Scotland, with an incredible 44% of their squad not born in Scotland.
Wow, word.
Now, they only have six players who play outside Scotland. All of the rest play in Scotland. So can you name those six players?
Easy.
And a little clue, there are five forwards and only one back.
I think I've got three straight off the bat.
Yeah.
There's one that will be particularly tricky. The rest you should definitely get. You should definitely get five.
Do you have a pen, Phil?
I do. There you go.
I'm pretty sure I've got five.
Hmm.
Straight away. Do you want to do this now, or do you want to have a little breather?
Up to you guys.
I'm just writing them down.
If you write down your five and then have a think about the other one.
Should we do it now? Let me just actually, before you answer that, JB, let me just remember how annoyed you were when we let the quiz go on a bit
that was
longer last
10
time.
10 minutes that you had.
So if you're going to be a man of your honour and word, you'll do it straight away. I think I've got all six.
All six would be spectacular.
Okay, nearly there now.
Because there are quite a few Scottish guys playing abroad who have represented Scotland in the past who aren't in the squad. Jay, you've got six?
Yeah. Well, yes. There's one more guy I need to get. I can't remember his name, so if it comes to me, I'll write it down.
Okay.
Done.
Your first one. Do you want to tell me the back first? Because that's nice and easy.
Laidlaw.
Yeah, correct.
Awesome. 1-1.
1 point each. Okay.
Okay.
Then, Tim, do you want to go for one?
I'm hoping he's fit. Otherwise, I've just really screwed myself up. Kieran Lowe, London Irish.
Oh, nice.
Is not in the squad.
Oh, he must be injured. He was in the squad. Damn it!
Jay.
I'm going to go Richie Gray.
Tim, do you have Richie Gray?
I have Richie Gray.
Richie Gray plays for Cast is correct. Tim, do you want to go for someone else?
Okay.
Jeff Cross, London Irish.
Jeff Cross of London Irish is correct.
I would not have got that. I have not put it down.
Jay had not put that down.
Jim Hamilton.
Tim?
I have Jim Hamilton.
Of Saracens is correct.
So,
I need two more.
I only have one name left.
And Jay, how many names have you got left?
I've got one name here, and I'm trying desperately to think of the other one.
All right, say the one you've got.
Okay, I've got Barkley in Cast.
Okay, what I wrote down two back rowers. I wrote down Alistair Strokosh, and I wrote down Johnny Beattie.
Okay. Johnny Beattie!
And I think, if Johnny Beattie's still at Montpellier or abroad, that's the one. I've crossed out Strokosh, and I've circled Beattie.
Now,
Beattie's in Cast, isn't he?
Beattie is playing abroad. Who did you say?
Barkley.
Barkley, I think he's playing for Scarlets, but isn't in the squad.
I meant Beattie.
Johnny Beattie wasn't in the original squad, but has been since called up.
That's what I wanted. That's the one I was after. Damn it!
So what does that mean the final score was?
Also...
There's one more.
So Alistair Strokos wasn't the one, was it?
Alistair Strokos is as well.
Oh, so that was the other one.
I got it wrong. No, there is another one
outside that. No, that doesn't count.
No, Strokos doesn't count. Strokos doesn't count.
Even though if there was, if we had an extra one, it's there on my sheet.
Yeah.
I think the guy you're looking for is a prop.
No.
Oh, it's not.
He's a back row. Plays for London Irish.
Blair Cowan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
How did I get Kieran Loeb and not Blair Cowan?
What about,
Still one.
Who is
Beattie wasn't on my original list because he wasn't in the original squad but was since called up.
Yeah, anyway, I got 5 out of 6.
I got 4.
Yeah.
I should have got Barkley. Well,
there was 7 and you got six out of the 7.
I got 6 out of the 7.
But you missed London Irish, Tim.
I know, I'm a bit surprised about that.
Yeah.
Bit surprised, but anyway. So let's talk about the Six Nations, and then, firstly, let's leave the England Welsh one to one side. Let's deal with that one finally. How do you see it going? I'm going to go to Phil first as an Englishman because I know what Jay's going to say on this one, and I know what I think. So what do you think, Phil?
I think the number of injuries that England have got will have an impact, and England are lucky or blessed that they have got more squad depth than anyone else, but. Their squad also has a lot less experience than the Wales squad, for example. Mm. And I think that is going to take its toll. Having your first three second rows out injured is going to cause an issue. Having what is probably your starting centre combination of Tuilagi and Eastmond, if everyone was fit, is going to be an issue. The 10 who's played the most rugby in the past 3 years since Lancaster got involved, being out injured, is going to cause another problem.
And they probably will play. I mean, look at New Zealand and the way they shut out Wales in the Autumn Internationals. It was just by kicking, really.
Yeah.
Territory. And I don't think England will mess about. I think they'll try and play the game in the right area. I think they'll try and keep it tight. Lots of mauls. I think that's the only area England have got. I mean, I'm really pleased that Garces is the referee, and he's quite good at refereeing the scrum. Mm. And that's the only thing I'm thinking is quite good for England, because I think they could, again, if Wilson's fit.
I think they could. Won't even be close to scrum. I don't see where you're getting this from. Wilson's a good, proficient scrummager, but he's not a world-beating scrummager.
England's pack is scary. He's the cornerstone of the Bath pack, which is the best scrummaging pack in the Premiership.
I'd argue Paul James is, but still. So this is interesting.
But I see Wales comfortably winning by more than 7, maybe 10 or 11 points.
Yeah.
The England first 15 could win this, but they're not going to win it, and it's not for the reasons that you think. I don't think this England team is substantially worse off for its injuries. In fact, in a lot of ways, these injuries have forced the hand of Lancaster, and actually I think he's got a slightly more talented team because of it. I think Atwood is a starter for me every time.
I might agree with you on that one.
Yeah, but then, you know, in the second, in the back row, if they lose Wood and they can bring in Haskell, I think that's brilliant. I think he's been forced to play for Napolo, that's great. And actually, you know, Manu is a loss, but, you know, if you have to play Jonathan Joseph and Kyle Eastmond, that's pretty good.
Eastmond is out. The only definitely fit centre pairing is Tuilagi and Jonathan Joseph, which is why Henry Slade has been called up into the squad, because he could legitimately be on the bench to cover 10 and centre.
And by the way, when you are that many centres down and you can call up Henry Slade, that's when you realise you're in good nick and you should be doing better than what you want.
We are one injury away from Burgess being the centre cover.
Yeah, maybe, actually. So, why are they going to lose? It's not because it's a significantly depleted squad depth. It's because they've already got their ready-made excuse. And I think that they'll use it.
I think the media have got that. I don't think the squad are thinking like that.
Well, they are. Because they're already like, do we have the roof open? Do we have it not open? If the roof is closed because of some weather, and they go out with a few guys missing, I don't think they have the mental strength because it's not built into them.
And it's a World Cup year and a home World Cup, and they know what the stakes are. I don't think it's not going to be a 30-3. Hear me now, believe me later. But I think Wales will win, and I think the bookies and everyone seems to be going that for that.
Wales by less than 7.
Mm.
Wales by less than 7. I don't see that. I think it'll be more than 2 scores.
Let's talk about some of the other games, because if you were an Irish fan listening to this, if you were an Irish fan or a Scottish fan or a Irish or Scottish or French even or Italian or whatever, if you supported someone else, you would be a bit frustrated by the podcast so far.
You would be, but I think that's an understanding that because England are playing Wales, and Ireland aren't playing France.
Yeah.
It's not really that much else to talk about.
Ireland travel to Italy.
Yeah.
Shall I use a proper sporting cliche?
Please do.
Going to Rome, that's a potential banana skin.
Oh my God. Let me just tell you about that phrase, the potential banana skin. We've been playing all right this year at Broughton Park. And every team talk, without fail, our forwards coach pulls us in and tries to persuade us that not only is this a banana skin, but we're destined to slip on it and break our backs. In fact,
That sounds like real positive chat.
Every team talk, potential banana skin. Watch out, boys, I'll beat you up at front. Thanks, coach. So every time you say potential banana skin, it makes me shudder. It makes me convulse.
It's one of those little cliches that gets dusted off. But it is a potential banana skin. However, Ireland, off the back of the autumn, however, without Jonathan Sexton, and with a lot of their big players either just coming back from injury or not totally fit, they're in kind of a bit of a... There's a little question mark over Ireland, isn't there?
There's question marks over who's going to play. Definitely. Definitely. They don't know who the best squad at the moment is, because having the likes of Keane Healy and Sean O'Brien, had they had 6 months to play, they would be guaranteed nailed on starters.
Yep.
But having only played one match last weekend, there's big question marks over them. Ireland will definitely have enough.
It feels to me like the rugby gods have dealt Ireland a very nice hand indeed, because they can come into the competition relatively slowly. They go to Italy, nice little warm-up, and it gives their big players an extra week or so just to get fit. And even if they... Who's their next game, Ireland, after Italy?
They play France at home.
OK, so they hopefully will be fit for that. But if they're not, they've got another week after that as well.
Yeah.
So it seems very fortuitous timing for the Irish. And they, to me, are the tournament favourites in my eyes.
The bookies would agree with you. They are currently tournament favourites, and I would agree with you as well.
Yeah.
I think they are.
So banana skin or not, they'll do what they need to do in Rome.
Darren Cave, after watching him play for the last two or three games, isn't nailed on.
Just question marks because he didn't play there in the autumn. So there's it's still all up in the air, that post O'Driscoll centre partnership.
Now Ruan Pienaar is Irish as well, or at least they're taking that to the UN, are they not?
After 81 caps for South Africa, it would be a difficult one to argue.
I'm sure they are petitioning some sort of world body on this.
They've got a couple of good scrum halves. I think Murray is a bit of a doubt. Owen Redden's obviously a very good scrum half, and Kieran Marmion.
Can I just
interrupt
you? I couldn't believe I saw this. Isaac Boss played for the Wolfhounds.
Yeah.
Where do they find him? A museum? I didn't even know he was still in Ireland.
Wales have got a pretty much fully fit squad. Ireland and England are ravaged by injury. And I mentioned earlier about Warren Gatland's approach. They have been, even during the autumn internationals, even now through the summer, they have just been on a massive fitness conditioning. They haven't been doing loads of rugby sessions because the game plan...
George North has.
Because the game plan is so simple. The game plan for Wales is so simple. All they've been doing is fitness. And it's quite interesting. And I wonder if there's any relationship between that and the fact that...
Simple isn't easy.
No. It's almost harder because the opposition knows exactly what you're going to do,
yeah,
and yet they still can't stop you.
It's interesting. It's interesting on the fitness, because Wales do, like, for a long time, they've claimed to be the fittest, strongest, fastest, all that, having their strength and conditioning camps in Poland and everywhere else. When they lost to New Zealand, they were there and thereabouts
60 minutes
until 65, maybe even 70 minutes, and it was those last 10 minutes when New Zealand, who are undisputed fittest rugby team in the world.
Yeah.
Are they fittest, or do New Zealand play in a certain way that wears teams down? So although the Welsh team, man for man, will be fitter.
Well, I mean, here's what it is. I think New Zealand's skills and understanding of the game and the way they play off each other and read the game, their game awareness and all that is of such a high level that you only need to drop a couple of percent off, as you will do in the last 10 minutes of a game, and they will rip you to shreds.
Because there's a lot of guys in the media saying New Zealand are fitter by far. And I'm thinking, there's only such a level of human fitness that can possibly be achieved. And it's not like 10% over Wales.
It's also the rugby intelligence. Yeah. I remember speaking to a prop who we all know, who's got, I think he's more than 200 National League appearances. Very experienced prop, who was never particularly fit. No. And he was talking to a younger lad who was fitter fitter than him in training, but struggled a lot more in the games. And he was saying, like, pick your battles. You don't have to hit every ruck. You don't have to sprint for 60 minutes, then blow up. If you play smart, you'll last the full 80. And that's possibly what New Zealand do as well.
Is this a very good prop who has excellent hands?
Superb hands.
Yeah, I know who he's
put me in for a few tries over the years. Yeah.
Prop that I played with, you played with, and Tim's played with.
I've played with him as well.
Yeah.
I played with him at Manchester. You played with him where, Jay?
Actually, no, I don't know if I have. I've trained with him because he's brought up Park originally.
Yeah, he takes his little lad down there to mini rugby. I see him every Sunday.
Indeed he
does. Yeah.
All right, Flinny. Anyway. France against Scotland. Now, a resurgent Scotland. A Scotland who've got a bit of belief and they've got a bit of something about them, a bit of steel. And I think Blair Cowan, the one name we missed on the earlier thing, is the perfect one player that shows what Scotland have that they haven't had before. And that's just hardness, robustness, and
a certain certainty. That's a terrible phrase. There's a certainty in the way that Scotland play now. I don't think that they had that. It looks like they've got a very clear game plan, and they've got the personnel to execute it. And that to me is the big difference. It breeds confidence.
Yeah, and having Glasgow playing really well at the moment, and having a lot of the squad from just those two teams, and Edinburgh are starting to play well. And it's interesting that Fern Cotton.
What did Fern Cotton say about the game? Yeah. She said, I prefer France's kit to Scotland's. Macron's not really. I don't wear Macron.
But they're all great.
Yeah, Fern Cotton. Fern.
Can't go say it.
Vern Cotter, who has won stuff in the past.
What's he won? I love this discussion. What's he won?
Top 14 title with Clermont. European Challenge Cup with Clermont, and he was with the Crusaders when they won two Super Rugby titles as well.
Yep.
Back in your box, JB.
It's just interesting that they've got a coach who has got that experience winning stuff. And so it's that kind of positive mentality and having that experience to know what it takes to win when the games are tight and when you're getting to 60, 70 minutes and not it's making changes from his point of view that will win the game rather than lose by 2 points.
Yeah.
So his experience will be invaluable.
I think it's really interesting when you look at the Six Nations sides and you look at the ones that are struggling, Italy, France and England to a degree, and you look at the ones that are on an upward trajectory, Wales, Ireland, Scotland, the three teams that you mentioned second that are doing well, their coaches give their teams an identity in the way they play.
One word, give a tag to each team.
Wales, fitness, power. Oh, yes, two.
Size. One. Big.
Gatland ball.
England.
See, this is it.
Clueless. Uncertain.
Scotland. Forwards. England would be forwards.
Yeah, forwards. Yeah, I go with that.
Ireland, favourites.
Ireland, ball players.
And balanced.
Yeah.
Italy. I think they've got the best balanced team.
Yeah.
Italy.
Who?
Parise.
Yeah, Parise.
France would be Kiwis. Or foreigners.
Foreigners,
yeah.
And Scotland, like, their game plan, I just think hardness.
What a weird position. French manager.
I don't know. Scotland play a bit, though, don't they?
It's interesting watching the Glasgow-Bath game the other week, because Glasgow scored the good tries. They've got some good attacking backs, like Bennett outside centre, and Tommy Seymour is a very good wing. And Maitland, who may or may not be fit.
But Maitland's class.
They will play some rugby, I think.
And Hogg?
Yeah, it's improving for Scotland, something like that. They're on an upward trajectory.
Hogg, Seymour and Maitland are nice back three.
Yeah.
By anyone's standards.
I just look at Wales and what they're starting to get done now with their central contracts. Besides the injuries, which is because they've had to change the way they structure their season this year with the Pro 12 now really counting every game. But Scotland, what they're managing to do, it just makes me wish England had central contracts.
No, it doesn't.
Could just pull all these guys out.
You know, because, it's nice for three or four games a year, but the Aviva is far too good a competition to be ruining it with central contracts and pulling people
maybe
out. And it's the Aviva which gives you all that strength and depth.
Yeah,
all you need is a good manager. All you need is Warren Gatland to manage the national team. You would be flying.
Or if you had slightly higher salary caps, which they will have next year, and all those Aviva squads are even stronger, it means that you can rest some of those internationals a couple of weeks before.
It's a good
France
shout.
Have got a really worrying situation where some of the players are playing too much rugby and are absolutely exhausted, and others can't get a game, and there's kind of nothing in between.
Yeah, you're right about that. There was an interesting thing I saw. It was an horrible punt article.
You've got to be very careful that. This is a message to horrible punts. If you want it to go like a bit more mainstream, please change the name.
Yeah. Difficult, tricky
name. Tricky one to say, isn't it?
Tricky one to say.
Hey, boss, you read horrible punts this week across the office.
But because a lot of the French players have to play in the top 14 in the rest weeks, the two rest weeks in between rounds two, yeah, and rounds three, and rounds three and rounds four, that since 2011, France have only won once in all of their combined round three and round four matches after the international breaks.
Fact.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's one in six, so it's not, but it does show that France would normally win a lot more than one in six, yeah, of their Six Nations games.
So Wales, we think is going to go. We think Ireland are going to win away, and France to win in Paris?
Yes, but
I think that's going to be close. I'm going to go for Scotland.
So yeah, France's autumn internationals they started off really positive, really, really strong win against Fiji. They ground out a win against Australia, played some good stuff, but it wasn't the best autumn, so you just don't know.
And if you think about managers that really have got it wrong recently, Saint-André is pretty high on that list.
Yeah.
I mean, his last few games have looked so awful. Very, very odd going on.
And selecting a squad with players like Rory Cocker, South African, rather than Morgan Parra, who got left out initially, yeah, like, who's a darling of the French media.
Isn't he third highest paid rugby player in the world?
Yes.
He's right up there.
Yeah, definitely top five.
I think France are going to win.
I think as well. I think it should be a really good game because, and I really hope Scotland play the way that Glasgow are playing at the moment, play some good rugby.
I think Scotland are going to win. I think it's going to be a huge upset.
You get good odds on that in Paris.
We have not got long to wait. There is obviously other rugby going on there at the weekend, and here's our pick of the LV Cup matches. There's some championship games as well. A good game to look out for. Bristol go to London Scottish. Off the back of, get this, Bristol lost to Cornish Pirates.
Did they?
45 points to 38.
Jeez.
Which puts Worcester, after 13 games, on top by a point.
But you're delighted about that, Tim.
But yeah, Dean Ryan's team with all their youngsters and 13 games gone with Bristol with all the big signings for next season.
Oh, that'd be hilarious. If they don't go up.
It would be funny, but they've got to go to London Scottish, who are a place below them in the league. That'll be a humdinger of a game.
Yeah, good team.
But nothing on Friday night, and we cannot wait. We will be tweeting at Rugby Podcast. And yeah, don't forget to get involved in our Six Nations Fantasy Rugby League. It's the ESPN.co.uk, the ESPN Scrum site, have got a fantasy league that they're running there. And yeah, we have got our own little private league within that. Just getting on for 150 people have joined in with that. If you come and join in as well, you could win some prizes, which Canterbury are kindly donating a load of stash and kit and whatnot that you could get.
Imagine wearing a Canterbury t-shirt right now. There you go.
Exactly.
Oh, it's lovely, that.
That's a lovely t-shirt, nice. Jay.
I mean, I'm not in great shape, but it makes me look in good shape.
It does, doesn't it?
That's what Canterbury does.
Makes your arms look like Dimitri Zarzewski's.
Stop it. Oh, do you want me to just tell you what happened in tonight's Super Bowl? Or last night's Super Bowl, if you're listening on Monday morning.
Right, so it's Sunday evening, it's 9 o'clock, so we're 2.5 hours away from the start of the Super Bowl. However, when you listen to this, the Super Bowl will have happened, but JB hasn't seen it, so we're all messed up in terms of time. So JB's basically going to tell you what the outcome of the Super Bowl was after the Super Bowl's happened, but before he's actually seen it.
Yeah.
You're still with me? If you're still with me, off you go, JB.
Okay,
go on.
Spoiler alert, Tom Brady's going to Disneyland.
You might need to explain
what?
Because I know what that means.
Do you not know what it means?
No, I'm not an American football guy.
Oh, right, okay. I think the MVP of the Super Bowl goes to Disneyland.
Most valuable player, man of the match.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah,
I'm just filling all the gaps for you.
Thank you. So there's a very famous clip of Tom Brady when he wins his first Super Bowl, saying, I'm going to Disneyland.
Yeah, I've just looked it up.
Yeah. So they go to Disneyland.
They get a car and they go to Disneyland, basically.
So I think Tom Brady will be going to Disneyland again. I think Rob Gronkowski will...
The Gronk.
...get a couple of touchdowns. And I think that New England will win by throwing the ball in short patterns and making the Seattle corners tackle because they're not used to doing that.
Oh, come on. Just in layman's terms. So New England have won the Super Bowl. That's your spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Recorded before the Super Bowl, but after you might have seen or heard the result of the Super Bowl.
I'm very excited about it.
Well done, JB. Well done. So if you want to join our Fantasy League, nice one, Phil. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Tim.
Nice one, JB.
Thank you, Tim.
And we will leave you with a little reminder of the pin for our private Egg Chasers Fantasy League, which if you join at ESPN Fantasy Six Nations site and then add your team to our league with this pin, you could win all those prizes. Right, here we go. See you next time, boys. Come and challenge like-minded rugby fans and join the Egg Chasers Private Fantasy Rugby League for the Six Nations Championship. You could even win some prizes. It's the ESPN Fantasy Rugby League. We've got a private code. Come and join our league. Just type in 81262. That private league code is
81262.
81262. One more time.
Terminal 81262.